From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Financial Magic. Here's what's happening. Amazing story. President Donald Trump will accept an invitation by North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un to meet in a very dramatic development after months of saber-rattling between the two world leaders. Kim extended the invitation, and the president agreed that the two would meet sometime in May. Mr. Trump, according to White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, will accept the invitation to meet with Kim Jong-un at a place and a time to be determined. But, she said, in the meantime, all sanctions and maximum pressure must remain. But, you know, sounds like a good sign. And as U.S. and South Korean intelligence teams investigate the sincerity of Kim's newfound willingness to engage in talks and dialogue, they are also tracking reports that the North Korean dictator is dealing with a variety of health issues. Now, while there is little hard medical evidence, Kim's family history, physical appearance, and behavior in recent years have led to speculation he may suffer from a range of conditions, including gout, diabetes, high blood pressure, and psychological issues. A bizarre story we have in the news at coasttocoastam.com. 27 pairs of severed human hands have been found mysteriously washed up on an ice-covered island in Russia. This is weird. The shocking discovery was made close to the city in the far eastern side of Siberia, close to the border with China. 27 pairs of severed hands. How strange can it get? One of my old favorite toy stores when I used to go shopping for my kids, Toys R Us, is making preparations for a liquidation of his bankrupt U.S. operations after so far failing to find a buyer or reach a debt restructuring deal with lenders. While the situation is still fluid, a shutdown of the U.S. division has become increasingly likely in recent days. Hopes are fading that a buyer will emerge to keep some of the business operating or that lenders will agree on terms of a debt restructuring. All of their problems started some time ago with a $7.5 billion leveraged buyout. President Trump has signed an order that imposes tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from all foreign countries while carving out an exception for Canada and Mexico for now, while the North American Free Trade Agreement negotiations, NAFTA, are underway. And stocks. Well, an expert at J.P. Morgan Chase says stocks could eventually crash by almost 40%. Let's check in with the author of Thieves in the Temple and host, Andre Aguilachan. What do you think about that, Andre? 40%.
Yeah, it's a possibility, George, and thank you for having me. But, you know, there are a number of positive factors that continue to support equities. Outside of these trade issues that have driven a lot of the volatility that we've seen as of late, we've seen, corporate profits that have been growing. We've seen economic data that has improved. And we've seen the European Central Bank step up and say, listen, we're going to leave our rates unchanged.
It's going to be a mess, Andre. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. Well, we are finally getting a look inside the biggest planet in the solar system, Jupiter. And it's a very strange situation. They're saying that the central cyclone at the planet's north pole is encircled by eight other storms. Wow. Peter Davenport's from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, did you get any reports about a large boom over the state of Washington?
I did indeed last night, George, and I looked at some of the news broadcasts. I'm 99% sure it was nothing but a bolide, but you can never be 100% sure, of course, but I've seen photos that allege to have been photos taken of the object, and if they're accurate reports, it just looks like a bolide, very prominent bolide. So, yeah, I did see that.
Okay, and what else do you have for us this week, Peter?
Got three reports that I'm really looking forward to sharing with the Coast audience, George. The first one comes from Moody, Texas, and from December of 1949. This past Sunday, I got received an email from a gentleman who had identified himself as a healthcare professional with PhD and possibly MD credentials, both. So he's probably a very reliable source of information. He describes a close encounter of the third kind that occurred apparently 2 days before Christmas is his best estimate of the date. In 1949, he was 7 years of age at the time. He was walking to school with his 17-year-old sister and his sister's friend, a young woman, same age, 17, walking to school. They were walking by an empty lot in their community, their neighborhood of Moody, Texas, and they were transfixed by the fact that there appeared to be a disc-shaped object that was sitting in that empty lot. They stopped walking, of course, and they were staring at it. They quickly realized that there were apparently at least three creatures underneath the flange of this disc-shaped craft. Looked somewhat like a mushroom cap sitting on its stem, I gather, with a ramp leading down to the ground level. He describes the craft in very great detail. That report is now posted to our website. People can read it for the, again, the 23rd of December, 1949. They watched this object. Apparently, his recollection is 8 to 10 minutes, and it suddenly, the creatures floated back into the craft, something straight out of the day The Earth Stood Still, George.
I love that movie, too.
They floated back into the craft. The ramp rose and embedded itself into the bottom of the flange, so it could not be seen at all. It was just a seamless attachment to the craft. Suddenly, it rose up. It rose to about twice the height that they estimated it was about 1 to 2 stories tall. It rose up to 2 stories or 4 stories and suddenly just streaked off. It disappeared from their sight in approximately, he estimates, 2 to 3 seconds. He goes on in great detail, describes the volunteer fire department that came, roped it off. They took samples. They measured it with a Geiger counter. The U.S. military showed up. Really a very, very intriguing report. I have yet to interview the source of it, but I'm going to during the upcoming week. The second report I'd like to share with the audience is equally interesting, I feel, as the first. It comes from a gentleman who has moved to this country from Algeria.
Uh-huh.
In 1991, he was a 14-year-old lad. He was standing in the garage of their family home in the city of Algiers, the capital of Algeria, I believe. And his mother started screaming for him to come outside and look at what she was looking at. He stepped outside and saw, again, a disc-shaped craft hovering over a row of trees on their property. They stood there for probably 4 or 5 minutes, he estimates, watching this object. And suddenly, lights on it started blinking. His impression was it was attempting to communicate with the witnesses. Suddenly, it, like the last report, rose up and just shot off in the sky, disappearing in a matter of seconds. And the third report that I would like to share comes from a year and a week ago, George, from Ontonagon, Michigan, which is in the extreme western end of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
It's way over there.
Way over there, right on the lake. This gentleman who's ex-military, which always carries a great deal of sway with me, very rarely have I had any difficulty or false reports from people who've had the responsibility of serving in the U.S. military. Gentleman writes that he was on the 28th of February last year, 2017, he was riding his snowmobile near his home in a wooded area, and this was about 11 or 11:30 at night. Even though he had a very bright headlight burning on the snowmobile, he suddenly became aware that the whole area around him and around his snowmobile was illuminated more brightly than what his headlight was shining and illuminating. Well, he stopped his snowmobile, he turned the engine off, he turned around, and there was an object, a very bright yellow-white object, light shining at him, almost blindingly bright, he said, with pink strobing lights on either side of it. He said it was one of the most amazing things he has ever seen in his life. Suddenly, it just disappeared from his sight. But while he was watching it, he had the presence of mind to call his wife at home. He got home and realized, or his wife informed him, I should say, that he thought it had been 3 minutes earlier that he had telephoned her. It had been 2 hours.
Wow.
So a possible abduction case.
You got that right.
So a great deal of very interesting stuff is going on. Tons of recent reports. They're posted to the UFO Center website. We'll have some photographs up tomorrow morning early. And we've posted, by the way, George, if I can take just a few seconds more, we've posted an announcement on our website, on our homepage, about a few changes in the manner in which we use the hotline.
Okay.
The prank calls are coming in by the tons, and we've got to change the hotline a bit.
All right, Peter. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, Robert Young Pelton joins me as we're going to be talking about world events that could affect you and your family next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, with our special guest tonight, Robert Young Pelton. He's become the inspiration role model for a new generation of intellectual adventurers. He's an author. Some of his books include License to Kill, Hired Guns, and The War on Terror. He's a journalist, filmmaker, photographer, adventurer, explorer, expert. Let me take a breath here. Robert has trained Navy SEALs in survival, participated in secret special forces training, and motivates young people to do some meaningful things with their time on this planet. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Mr. Pelton, how are you?
I'm doing good, George.
Good. What do you think of this apparent upcoming meeting between President Trump and the North Korean leader?
Well, I think it's long overdue, and I think people might have to give President Trump some credit for his rather chaotic approach to foreign policy. So, you know, it's the relationship had been frozen since the 50s, and with his saber rattling by Twitter and the insults and making fun of the leadership, suddenly they realize that they're not going to make much progress just sitting and firing off missiles into the ocean. So I think it'll be positive, and I think China probably had some handedness in the background, as did South Korea, so it's good.
Yeah, I think China had a lot to do with it, Robert, probably forced him to do this, and we'll have to see what happens with the meeting. Do you think it could be a trick on his part?
No, you know, just last week we were going to start targeting the ships that delivered goods to North Korea, sort of cutting off one of their last lifelines. So, you know, we've been turning the screws, and, you know, once they run out of things like food and supplies and fuel, they're done. So they just didn't see any upside in maintaining some kind of a Cold War stance against America.
Can you do a secret nuke program without the world knowing about it?
No. I mean, that was one of our major investments after World War II, is not only to build the weapons, but also to set up satellite systems to monitor their existence, you know, whether it's measuring, you know, just the slight traces of nuclear contamination or heat or whatever. I mean, that's what we do, and we have a significant amount of investment in that area.
Take a look at the globe, Robert, and tell me, what do you think? What is some of the pressure points out there?
Well, you know, the thing that we should be paying attention to are kind of boring things like population growth and internal squabbles and things that don't really make much sense to us because they're not big and shiny. But, you know, you see wars in places like Libya, Yemen, you know, Syria, and they just seem to grind on forever. I mean, even Afghanistan, they talk about being in our 17th year. We don't pay attention to these, but we're involved in them. And at some point, we either have to be resolved or we have to pull out of them. So we're entering an era of, are we going to maintain this position of being endlessly involved in selling weapons to small countries to fight wars, or are we going to clean that up?
Well, and you're right. I mean, we're coming up on this is our 17th year in Afghanistan in October. In Iraq, of course, 15 years. I mean, are we ever going to leave these places?
Yeah, so things in Afghanistan are being set up to position the return of the Taliban, if you can believe it.
Right, right.
You've seen the expulsion, or at least the manipulation, that removed General Dostum, who was the first vice president, under sort of a cooked-up scandal. And then you saw the removal of the only other, well, I guess I'll call him a warlord, but he's a politician, Mohammed Atta, who fought with special forces to get rid of the Taliban. So the two individuals who had fought to get rid of the Taliban are suddenly being ousted from power. And most people didn't recognize it, but Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, who was probably the largest single terrorist in the region, was welcomed back into Kabul, and they're integrating his people. So the next step is to do that with the Taliban.
Will we be friends with the Taliban?
No. I mean, we are going to start packing our stuff and leaving, but what we're trying to do is set up a sort of carrot and stick, and this spring we'll see a lot of violence and action against the Taliban by a refreshed and expanded U.S. military. You know, I don't know if you've been following the news, but we've been doing some fairly damaging hits on large groups, including some spectacular bomb runs. Remember the MOAB that we started off in back in the early 2017. All this is happening to tell the Taliban that we're not playing nice anymore.
Robert, your phone's breaking up a lot on us.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
oh.
I can. It was
okay.
It was sounded like you were in a windstorm for a moment.
All right, I'm back. So bottom line is that we are making moves to end the conflict in Afghanistan. Syria, not so much. Libya, we don't care about. Yemen's still a mess. But there are movements to be more bellicose and therefore offer more opportunities for peace talks.
Robert, bring some of this home for a moment. The guy, the woman at home listening to this program right now, family members, maybe they are single, and they say, why does this affect me? What do I care? What do you say to them?
Well, we have existed in an economy that has relied on strongmen running sort of the MENA area, Middle East, North Africa. And those strongmen have kept a relatively poor group of people under their thumb and provided us with the oil and the basic things we needed. And now that we're moving into oil dependence, and now that the population has surged in these countries, what we're seeing is a dramatic change. We can no longer rely on oil from these places. So we've, you know, designed fracking. We've done all these other things to make America energy independent. But we're still involved in these countries that have sort of exploded because of the huge population growth. The largest single growth in population has been in the Middle East and North Africa. And this led to the Arab Spring in 2010, which led to the fracturing of a number of countries and then sort of descent into chaos.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Egypt fell, Libya fell, basically those governments.
Yeah, and they haven't
been fast.
So we have to make a decision. Do we get mired in these petty conflicts, or do we just ignore them? And we're starting to ignore them because we don't necessarily need the oil. And the biggest change we've seen, of course, is Saudi Arabia, who suddenly woke up and said, hey, I guess Wahhabism, 150 years of Wahhabism is not working, so let's be more moderate and let's try to move towards the Western view.
Yeah, I mean, they're opening up movie theaters, they're letting women drive now. What's getting into them?
Because we don't need their oil anymore. So, and they're terrified that if they start losing income from oil, they'll have to be traders. They'll have to do business with Western countries, mm-hmm. and Western businessmen will have to travel there and try to do business in a place that's still in the 6th century in terms of the way they view things. So they've made some dramatic changes. I mean, it doesn't sound very dramatic to us to let women drive, but to them it's a big deal. So
Well, I'm glad they're coming into the new world, to be sure. Robert, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast, continue talking about some world events, and we'll take some phone calls with you next. World Events with Robert Young-Pelton. We'll also let you jump in. We'll take your calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. Well, in a few days, it'll be Salt Lake City live showtime. How quickly it has finally come up. And the tickets are still going. They've still got some tickets available on the sides. So take advantage of that. I'm going to tell you how you can get the tickets in just a second. But the event is Saturday, March 10th, so just in a few days, Salt Lake City, Utah. It's a live stage show event with three special guests, some music. You're going to love the show. Then we do a meet and greet afterwards. So simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Click events at the top of the homepage, or it's in the carousel where the pictures revolve. It's the last button or so. And you can go straight to their website at the Jenna Wagner Theater and get your tickets that way. Now, here's a phone number if you don't have a computer. 801-355-2787. Then Scottsdale, Arizona, April 21st, and then Las Vegas, Nevada, June 9th at the Silverton Casino. All that information at events at coasttocoastam.com. And George Norrie back with you along with Robert Young-Pelton. Robert, what's new for you? What exploring will you be doing lately?
I'm working on a video game in which I appear.
Really?
Yeah, or I don't shoot anybody.
You got the companies doing the video game, and you're one of the talent in the game?
Yeah, so it's called CI Games, based out of Warsaw, Poland, and they do quite large games, but they designed a new game in which I'm sort of the center character, and I go to these various wars and introduce people to these not that fictional individuals who then become the players.
Huh. Does it look like you?
It better look like me.
All right, and I guess you're in what, a cartoon form?
No, it's you literally go into a studio with 140 something cameras and they digitize you and you look just like you. I mean, you can tweak.
Remarkable.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I mean, you've seen these games where they look like films. There's a new one about World War II where it's more interesting than watching Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, no, it really is. And you're part of it, too.
Yeah, and then so me being in the game, I can play myself, which I don't know what that means.
That's I want to get your take. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. What's your take on the soon-to-be one-day king, Mohammed bin Salman, who's bringing all these changes to Saudi Arabia? At the same time, he's also bringing a war with Yemen that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So what do you think, grade him right now on what he's doing in Saudi Arabia, and then what do you think of this Yemen situation?
Well, that's a tough one. Well, bottom line is that he's dying, 32 years old. He's trying to change 150 years of corruption and patronage and just sort of old-fashioned thinking. And he's very worried about Iran. And as you know, Iran sits right across the water, and all the oil that Saudi Arabia owns is in Shia sort of ethnic territory.
Sure.
And so when Yemen fired up, Saudi Arabia and the Emiratis decided to start fighting a war, and they haven't done very well at fighting wars. And they're not doing well right now, so they have lots of American hardware, lots of American intel support. We do all the refueling, but they are massacring Yemenis and turning what was the poorest Arab country into an even poorer country. So he's doing a terrible job of prosecuting that war, but he's now doing an outreach trying to show that Saudi Arabia is open for business and we're moderate and we're not, you know, backing fundamentalist activities around the world, which, you know, is the wellspring of much of the terrorism that we've been fighting since the 70s, since 1979. So if he continues on that path, I'll give him full marks. At some point, he's going to have to stop killing people in Yemen.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Might be up to Iran, but we still have a major problem with Iran. You have two fundamentalist countries, both sort of with ethnic divisions internally, and both dependent on oil for income. So this will be the fundamental battleground over the next 5 to 10 years.
There seems to be some turmoil within Iran with some of the younger people who just don't like the way they're running the country.
Yeah, but there always has been. I mean, if you look at a map of Iran's ethnic makeup, it looks like a patchwork quilt. You're seeing dozens of different ethnic groups held together by, you know, an iron-fisted government. But the Iranians themselves are fairly progressive, well-educated people who don't really support, you know, the Ayatollahs. So, again, like North Korea, like Saudi Arabia, like all the Arab Spring countries, it's going to pop, and they know it. So do they want a slow deflation, or do they want an explosion? And we're sort of spectators in this, because we really don't want to get in the middle of Iran, but we're also supporting a coming proxy war, you know, to show Iran that if you don't join the rest of the world, you're going to be fighting wars on all your borders with proxy forces.
Good point. Let's take some calls now. Sherry in Memphis, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. Sherry, you're on with Robert Young Pelton. Go ahead.
Hello. My question is, how can the globalist movement be slowed down or stopped? Is it basically up to the United States? And do you think there's much hope in this that at least could be slowed down, because it seems to be run by people who want power for their own gain, which does not sound too good for the common man? And my second question is, what do you think is the future for Iraq? What kind of a chance do you think they have?
Take that one first, Robert.
In terms of Iraq is slowly moving towards stability. We may decide to keep chopping it up. There's some elections coming up, which will be important in whether it'll swing towards the Iranian influence or stay within the Sunni influence. But we've already kind of sliced it up by creating Kurdistan and going against Iran, you know, with the war in Syria. So I think Iraq will be improving regularly, and it's just up to Turkey now whether they stir things up in Iran. And this is one of the problems, which is her first question, is, you know, how can America do anything? And we took a fairly passive role during the Obama administration against three of the major rising powers. So, you know, Iran and Turkey have their own global view of how they see things. And if you look at a map of the world, you know, Turkic influence goes all the way from Istanbul all the way into Afghanistan, and they see that as not an empire, but as a major trading center. It goes all the way into China, actually. The Iranians see the Shia revolutions going on in various countries, and they want to see how they can use that to their advantage. And then you have little Russia, which has the economy the size of Australia, but you know, they're trying to make as much impact as they can while oil prices hold up. So these three entities are the new sort of axis of evil, if you want to call it that.
Where does Russia sit with all of this, Robert? Are they quietly manipulating things, or what are they doing?
No, Russia's the guy that tries to steal your lunch money, but he's only 4 feet tall. So he's, you know, Putin is using the fact that they supply the majority of the fuel that keeps Europe, you know, warm. It's sort of as bullying tactics, and he's using the vacuum in Syria and Libya and places like that to provide weaponry and contractors and expertise, because we're not in there. And at some point, he's going to lean too far forward, and we've already had some conflicts with the Russians in places like Syria, and they lose because our military was specifically designed to defeat the Russians, and Putin knows that. So he's got to be a bad boy, but not too bad.
He's going to get reelected, no doubt, right?
Well, is there an election? I mean,
yeah, he's coming up for another one. I see what you mean.
But you're seeing how in China and Russia, people are migrating towards these lifetime term leaders.
Yeah, it's weird.
Well, it's a throwback, but it's how they view, you know, their power and their future. And same with Turkey. I mean, Turkey is now basically run by a military dictatorship, and they are getting very bellicose and very aggressive in pushing out their boundaries and their trade. So we have to look at that and say, are we just going to sit by and let this happen, or do we have to get in there and sort of mix things up?
Well, what are we going to do? How are we going to go to China and play around with that? The fact that they have decided that the president can run forever.
Well, but think about this. China is building what they call the Belt or the Great Road, which is designed to send cheap Chinese products to the entire world. And they're investing billions and billions of dollars in infrastructure in all these countries so that they can move their goods in and out and find cheap labor. We don't even think like that. We don't have any infrastructure for this country, let alone the entire world. So they're doing like a Marshall Plan, and we're still trying to figure out how to replace bridges in the East Coast. So it would be nice if we thought bigger than just fixing America. You know, how do we get American goods efficiently into places like China and India and even Nigeria, one of the fastest growing countries on earth? So we're getting a little too nationalist, and we should be a little bit more globalist.
Let's go to Joe, Long Island. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Young. Two questions. If you look at Saudi Arabia, you know, supposedly they're getting diabetes and obesity. You know, they're rich and they get food delivered from McDonald's. And that reverberates back to here where we got a high obesity rate. And I just wonder if it's people really overeat or if it's just really bad food. And also in Saudi Arabia, you've got a lack of water and they're buying some water here. But at the same time, there's concern about the aquifers being ruined or damaged by fracking. And eventually, are we going to have a water problem worldwide where people can't get clean water?
The CIA estimates that there's going to be wars over water. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, well, interesting enough, Saudi and most Arabian countries have actually very good diets. They eat...
It's a Middle Eastern diet. It's a good one.
Yeah, exactly. It's when you eat Western food into that region that they suddenly get diabetes and obesity and things like that. Secondly, there's not a whole lot you can do when it's 120 degrees outside. A lot of these countries have grown up with the idea that you don't do hard labor. That's done by people you bring in from Bangladesh and other countries. So if you go to some of these countries like Dubai or the UAE, and you see just legions of young men walking around shopping malls doing nothing. They don't really have any sort of work ethic like Americans do, where you think like you're working on the farm or you're sweating. It's a different lifestyle. Now, they're trying to do that. They're trying to get people into the workforce, but it's a traditional thing to exist off patronage, which, you know, the big chief gives the little chief's chunk of money and they give a little chunk of money, and you basically do minor work. You hire people to do labor.
Next up, let's go to Wayne in Chicago. Hi, Wayne. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay,
thank you,
Wayne,
for your guest, too.
Thank you.
Yes, I want to say to your guest that, you know, I don't think the U.S. is going to leave Afghanistan anytime soon because they've discovered like $3 trillion in rare earth minerals. Like if I had overthrown a country and I found $3 trillion in rare earth minerals and the guys who were running the country before I overthrew it want to just kill little kids for going to school, I'm not going to leave that $3 trillion to them. I'm going to bring in my corporations and set up shop and help the people of Afghanistan and help my people at the same time. So I don't think they're going to leave Afghanistan anytime soon. And as far as the broader Middle East, in my thinking, I think that they are trying to just take complete control of all the oil because countries like Russia, Venezuela, China, they want to get rid of the dollar as the world currency, world reserve currency. So what do you think, sir?
Well, it's interesting. I just did a fairly in-depth report on mining and income in Afghanistan, and I was asked to do this because people hear about this $1 trillion estimate that the U.S. made for the minerals, and I'm sure we all remember the the big proposal by Eric Prince to go in there and pay for the war by pulling out rare minerals. But the problem is, if you look at a map of Afghanistan, there's nowhere to send those minerals. There's no rail system. There aren't even some of the basic elements needed to smelt things like copper and whatever. So the Chinese have already grabbed all the major mining spots, and they're sitting idle because they just can't figure out what to do with it. They have to build railroads. There are rare minerals, and yes, you could probably fly out or truck out rare minerals, but they're owned by insurgent groups. And as most people think that drugs fuel the Taliban, it's actually more taxes for minerals than to keep them afloat. So you're going to have to fight your way into these areas to wrest out these minerals. And mining takes a lot of infrastructure investment, and people just don't want to do it.
Robert, I'm not sure we ever had an exit plan for Afghanistan or Iraq.
No, and you know, once again, like Yemen, Afghanistan is an extremely poor country, and all we're doing is what everybody else did, is just stop somebody from doing something else. So whether it was backing the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets, or whether it was going in to topple the Taliban to get at Al-Qaeda, it was a very short-term sort of stop those people from doing things. The Afghans are great partners of ours, but we basically underwrite their entire security program. So if we were to pack up and go home, there would be no money around the country.
It would crumble quickly. And what would happen to all those people who supported us in Afghanistan if the Taliban came back?
Well, strange enough, warfare in Afghanistan is not that bad because you still need those people to work and do things. So Afghanistan would just drop back to what it was 20 years ago, a very poor agrarian country that's landlocked and abused by criminals and drug dealers and whatever. So I wouldn't see anything catastrophic. It's, if you go to Kabul, you'll be impressed at how big the city is and how modern it is and all the big buildings and all the construction going on. But that's all EU and the U.S. money being pumped in there. As soon as that stops, there's no underlying economy.
Kozai, what was the name of the guy who was there that we installed as president for a while?
Karzai and then Ghani.
That's right.
Yeah. And President Ghani is an economist. He's a very smart guy. He's actually an American. Had to give up his passport to run the country. But he is trying to just stabilize the country first. And he's got a lifeline until, I think, 2020. So after 2020, everybody has to sit down and say, do we really want to spend billions of dollars to support, you know, 400,000-man security apparatus? So that's why you have to integrate the Taliban as quickly as possible to stop the war.
Is the world in chaos, or is it under control?
The world is in chaos. The chaos is a natural state of affairs. In other words, if you try to predict things, they typically won't happen. But yet, person by person, you know, we tend to live fairly mundane, predictable lives. If you're making money in the stock market or on commodities, you're going to hope that there's chaos, you know, sudden changes and things that are unexpected. But what we're not seeing is the massive increase in population and the massive increase in poor countries. And you're seeing a lot of disasters and things that seem larger than they used to be because more and more people are being affected. And those disasters weigh on these poor economies. So, you know, we've seen it here in the States with these, everything from Katrina forward, where we just marvel at the impact. But it's just because more and more people live here and more people are impacted.
Good point. Robert, thank you so much. Robert Young Pelton, the World Explorer. Up next, we're going to talk a little bit about 12 months of magic and manifestations. It's called Financial Alchemy. Morgana Ray joins me next.